The Tom Woods Show, episode 1424.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, I have the best, nicest, smartest, brightest group of like-minded, friendly folks you can possibly imagine, where we learn from each other, we get outraged with each other, we rejoice with each other. It's a wonderful community of folks, and you, as a loyal listener of The Tom Woods Show, belong inside it. It's called The Tom Woods Show Elite, and you can get in there via supportinglisteners.com. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. Remember we had a week of Michael Malice? That sure was a success, wasn't it? I'm just giving him a hard time. Of course, it's a delight to have Michael Malice on the show. My point is, it gave me the idea that maybe I could do theme weeks. So this week's theme is Ladies of Liberty. And today we're talking to a content creator who actually goes by Brave the World. But we'll be calling her Julia today. She's got a YouTube channel with tremendous content. She's an anarcho-capitalist like me. She talks about all different topics, ranging from cryptocurrency to the family. And I wanted to talk to her about some of her, well, let's say more controversial material. So we're going to do that today. And I'm going to link to all her stuff at tomwoods.com/1424. You can check out her website at bravetheworld.com. Julia, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
There's so many things that you and I can talk about. It's ridiculous. It's because you produce so darn much over the years. There's so many interesting topics. So I've had to be selective, but I'm glad to talk about anything. Wherever this conversation goes, I'm very happy to follow it. Somebody who was, this is going to sound a little creepy, researching you for me. I said, she's got so much content. Tell me the best stuff. You know, send it to me. I want to review it. Sent me a couple of older videos of yours that I definitely want to talk about. But then when I went to your website today and I saw what's going on, you know, frankly, in your personal life and your family and the sorts of topics you talk about now, I thought it all ties together very nicely. So let's start with some of those, a couple of those older videos. And I guess I need to start with feminism, even though, as I told you, I'm afraid that having a sort of Ladies of Liberty week on the show will mean that the whole week is just about feminism. And I don't want to leave the impression that my view is that women are qualified only to speak about feminism. However, when you're somebody like you who's done so much good work on it, it would be silly for me not to talk about it. So let me put it to you this way. There are a lot of perfectly well-meaning young women out there who would describe themselves as feminists on the grounds that they believe that they should at least have opportunities to, you know, follow their dreams, let's say, to do what they want, to choose their occupation, to choose, well, obviously to choose a spouse, to make decisions, to be sovereign, in other words, not to have to get the permission of others. They want to be treated the way men would be treated. And they think this is just basic, simple justice, and that's what feminism is all about. So is that what feminism is all about? Is this a case of that was what it was all about, but then it's been betrayed, or has there always been some baggage with feminism, or are they thinking about it the wrong way? How do you respond to somebody who says, I'm a feminist because I just want equal opportunities?
Sure, you can have any kind of philosophy you want, and it can be as pure as, you know, the original women that coined the term or didn't coin the term, but had the skeletal outline of what feminism was and is not today. But what I'm saying is, you can have a philosophy and it can be pure in your mind and you can preach it. But I like to look at feminism today as the action, like what has happened, what are the results of this philosophy, what are we seeing? So, I mean, birth control is a big one, right? They equalize the playing field of reproduction in theory. But what is the result? You know, our mating market and sexual market is completely different now. It allows women to signal things that they couldn't before and do things that they couldn't before. And it puts men in a state of apathy. So, for example, with the birth control pill, if a woman can not get pregnant and still have men have intercourse with her without, you know, condom, like they have the kind of intercourse you have in a marriage where you do things that result in children usually. And then you have the birth control pill and it doesn't result in children. So basically, all of the incentive structures that nature had in place for human beings have been destroyed. And then that translates not only to, you know, downfall in having children and, you know, also a downfall in having families, having relationships, having healthy bonding moments with other human beings. And a very interesting result of it for men is men become placated and lazy because they can get consequence-free sex all the time from a lot of women and not have to work for it. They don't need to have a big career. They can live with their mom. As long as they have a bit of game, they can go get laid. And this has created for society a very short-term mentality in terms of life. And for women, unfortunately, men can turn this around. Like, men can keep having kids until like 45, even 60, I've heard 70, not preferable. But for women, it has very severe consequences that a lot of ladies figure out much later in life after they've done all that kind of feminist stuff of acting like a man. And then they're 35 and perhaps they're actually a very highly desirable woman on paper in most spheres of her life. But because she's 35 now, the man that realized that he should stop screwing around at 35 will go marry a 25-year-old and have a family with her. And the women are just kind of left behind. And it's a result of their own collective choices. And unfortunately, because so many women are making those choices together, the market becomes competitive for, you know, outdoing each other in sexual performance, whereas instead it used to be competitive in terms of chastity.
Anytime somebody says something like that, you get a collective eye roll from people who say, oh, for heaven's sake, people were never especially chaste. That's just a myth. They were secretly engaged in intercourse just as much as they are now.
Oh, that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. The nuance there is secretly. So today, it is promiscuity is celebrated and out in the open and accepted. So it is an expected behavior from women by men. So they don't have higher expectations of trying to have a wife and family because they can get the sex elsewhere. But when it's secret, those incentives of having the family, being married are still there because you don't know that people are screwing around. And also, that's kind of a difficult statement to prove. Like, there are stats in tribal communities where they don't have birth control, where like 20% of the offspring aren't the fathers, but that 20%, that is no, like, yes, that is the result of the woman getting pregnant by someone else, but are they having sex with 17 other men behind their husband's backs? Or is it like a one-time affair that results in having children? I would argue that although promiscuity and infidelity has always existed as a mating strategy, today it exists as a lifestyle.
Here I am in middle age, and I hate to be one of these fuddy-duddies who tells the young men how they ought to behave, but I wonder if the, I don't want to say cult-like, but the, let's say, extremely strong devotion toward Jordan Peterson is in some way a side effect of men, I mean, leaving the women out, but the men who have been sucked into this, the more conquests I have, the more satisfying a life I have. And boy, I must be much happier than people who don't do that. And yet there's something hollow in there. You know, they're looking around wondering, well, I thought this was going to make me really, really happy. And instead, I feel like a shell of a human being. What the hell went wrong here? I wonder if it's that.
Right. And it's actually quite sad at the same time because most of these guys who are quite isolated and depressed and need that uplifting, a lot of them are not actually having a lot of sex. It's still true today that like the top 20% of men have sex with all the women. That doesn't mean that the perception is different for the lower grade males. Like, the lower grade males know that they could probably go do that. Some of them are probably a little bit shy or anxious or like whatever makes them undesirable to women. But they know that it's available. They know they can go on Tinder. Things are preventing them from doing so. But their perception is that all these other guys except them are having sex. And a lot of them are. But there's still that percent of men who are not doing it. And it's like, okay, well, we're not getting married and having families. And I'm also not able to be as promiscuous as these other men because maybe I'm a little too short, or like I live with my mom and I'm not super attractive, whatever the reason is. And it isolates them to such an extent that we get, you know, the anger online, we get like the whole incel problem, which monogamy and marriage was supposed to fix, and it does in a way. But we have the worst of both worlds. We have serial monogamy, which is just polygyny that is like, it's de facto polygyny. The top men are just dating the best girls for like 3 years at a time, wasting the girls' time, and then moving on to the younger one. While the men that are less desirable don't get to date anyone because those guys are dating all the girls still and having sex with all the girls still. So not that much has changed except the expectations and the results. Like the actions are still there. You're still getting the top men doing the things with the women, even if they're not resulting in long-term relationships and marriage, displacing all the rest of the men, and that breeds resentment. And there's some interesting correlative studies that show that like polygynous cultures, like where the top men could have 100 wives, they always result in civil unrest. Like the rate of civil unrest and revolt is much higher in those societies because of all the incels, if you will. So it's very ironic that in today's culture where sex is so readily available, men are not only not getting the sex, they're opting out of it. And the resentment for not getting the sex is even higher because women are so much more promiscuous, or that is what they're signaling, at least.
Given that my program is a libertarian one, I'm curious about how you feel, if at all, the state exacerbates any of the problems you've identified.
Well, you know, a lot of people say that law is downstream from culture. So I don't, you know, I come from an anarchist background, like a anarcho-capitalist background, and we have a tendency to blame the state for a lot of stuff. But at the end of the day, kind of starts to sound whiny to me. And you are the state, you are the community, you are the population, you are the people. So you kind of have to lead with your front foot. Like you can't just, obviously you can criticize mass culture, but you actually have to take steps towards reversing that, because no one will follow a law that the majority of the population doesn't respect. Like if everybody thought that abortion was murder, it wouldn't matter if Roe versus Wade existed.
Well, that is really a great answer. That is such a great answer. Because I could have imagined you coming back with saying, well, the state subsidizes family breakup, or it subsidizes indolence, or it subsidizes self-destructive behavior on the part of men. And all those things would be true. But really, any self-respecting man is not going to be lured by them. So it to me is a deeply unsatisfying answer. So I'm glad you didn't take the bait of what turns out to be not as good a question as I thought. So now in the interim between the video that I was just talking about, because you have one, I'm going to link to the ones that I was talking about. I have to go back and look at the exact title of it because I've got so many things open here. Let's see if it was the, How Feminism Betrayed Women, that one. That's from back in 2014. But during that time, you've actually started a family yourself, and you were saying to me that you're actually doing the very thing you're telling people they ought to do, which is, frankly, be mature and, you know, quit running around being an anarchist advocate your whole life, which is a juvenile way to live your life. I mean, at some point, you got to do something that an adult does. An adult starts a family and has immediate responsibility for other human beings. So you did that, and you've made videos about that. Now, what do you think it is that people need to understand about something so simple as starting a family?
Oh, there's so much to
understand. Yeah, I know. There's an open one for you.
Well, all right. It depends on who you are, right? So if you're one of these people, you're, you know, type A, you're a huge go-getter, you want to enact change on the world, yeah, go ahead, do it. You've got a good span between, you know, being 18 to 25 to do all of that. Go for it. That doesn't mean that you can't actually have a family once you're done. And it doesn't mean that you can't do it in parallel, especially if you're a man. If you're a man, you're actually likely to be more successful after you have a family. That's a statistic truth. Having a family for a man is correlated with an increase in income, like a significant increase in income. And I just want to point out that many things that you accomplish in this life, they probably will not last or be remembered past 20 years. Unless you're, you know, Ayn Rand or someone very epic, you're not going to be remembered past 20 years and your work isn't going to really matter that much. Now, if you have a family and children, first of all, if you consider yourself a quality human being, you're passing on your quality genes. So that's good. Second, it'll, like I said, motivate you to do more with your life. Third, for women specifically, you realize that you don't drop dead like a lobster after you breed, right? Like your kids will grow up and they grow up really fast. And if you're not doing homeschooling, like they'll be in school and you'll have all the free time to continue what you wanted to do or do something new with your new perspective of motherhood. None of this stuff like cancels itself out. And a lot of people will, you know, point out the economics of the matter, like, well, I can't have kids and have time to do these things, or I'm going to have to work more, or et cetera. I mean, we can talk about the economics of mothers being able to or not being able to stay at home, because I realize on one hand, I'm really lucky that I get to stay at home and the free time that I do have can, you know, be spent talking to people like you and making content and whatever else I want to do. But on the other hand, I've made very specific and calculated life choices my whole entire life to get to this point. So I do take credit for where I am. And a lot of people just use it as an excuse. Oh, there's no jobs. Oh, I can't afford anywhere. Blah, blah, blah. Like move out of the city, get a job you might not think you might be under, you know, overqualified for because it pays. There's so many things you can do. And I find people my age just kind of whine about their economic status without making too many steps to change it.
Do you feel comfortable disclosing how many children you have?
1.5.
Oh, well, how about that? Now, the one, is this a boy or a girl?
I have a little boy and I'm pregnant. I'm about 5 months pregnant with my second one. And we plan to have many more.
Wow, how about that? Now, let me ask you specifically then, how old is the boy?
3.5.
Okay. In this kind of world that has all the flaws you've described, when he becomes an older man, let's say preteen, teenager, how do you intend to raise him in the sense of what are you going to teach him about the way the world is and how he ought to fit into it?
I think with children, the best way to teach is to model, right? So, you know, if you really screwed up your life and your kid sees that, then maybe you might need to verbally teach them a little bit more about life. But if your life is intact, you find fulfillment day to day. They see you finding fulfillment day to day. They see that you have a good relationship with their father. They see their extended family. They have a good groundwork for morality, whether that comes from religion or just modeling good behavior that's based on a set of ethics that, for example, have always existed in America and the West. Then you don't really need to actively teach them that much. Children learn by observation. And actually, if you start teaching them the opposite of what you're doing, it could actually, you know, kids pick up on that and they'll just think you're, you know, a hypocrite. So the best thing I could do for him is to continue to model good behavior. And then hopefully he will see the results of that good behavior and want it for his own life. This is probably why Gen Z is like making a good comeback, because they've seen a lot of their older siblings and their, you know, Gen X parents and boomer parents screw up a lot. And they're rebelling against that kind of culture that their, you know, parents and grandparents have created.
Tell me your opinion of the state of the very diverse, let's say, so hard to give one answer, but the state of the libertarian movement. given, or in, let's say, in light of the kinds of issues we're talking about in this episode?
I think the libertarians are a little bit detached from reality on some points.
No, really?
There's this whole we just want to be left alone, blah, 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 that whole thing, which I understand. And it works to an extent in many spheres of life, but that's not enough to just be left alone. It's really not enough because not all types of people will leave you alone. And if you haven't noticed, the state will not leave you alone just because you say, leave me alone. There has to be a lot of action that takes place. And a lot of, you know, this is, again, the problem with this generation. They want immediate results, but the real action comes from perhaps raising a family with the standards that you would like to see in the future world. That is how societies change. It often takes a generation. There are many countries that I can point to that had to go through this generational mindset change. Like, for example, Russia. Russia is still stuck in the communist mentality where there's plenty of distrust and worship of statism. But there is a new generation of people there who are unfortunately thrown in jail if they speak up about it, who, you know, have access to the internet and have gained a different perspective about how people should live and interact. And they are totally suppressed in Russia, but they do exist. And it's mostly the new generation of people. It's the young people. The older people are mostly paranoid, basically still commies in terms of their behavior. So you like changing someone's mind is very difficult, but raising new minds with a better standard for the world, that's like way easier, actually.
I've seen you have a couple of posts that I like a lot. First of all, I'm just very impressed with your stuff. It's really, really good. You have a post on 10 selfish reasons to have kids. Now, we've covered a little bit of that here, that people get nervous about having kids. They think it's just going to be nothing but a big burden and difficult to impossible. And it's not so. I mean, your life's going to be enriched in ways you can't even imagine. And I know sometimes people without children think that parents must be making that up, right? Like we secretly regret we've done this, so we have to put a brave face on it. That's not true at all. These are my best friends in the world. It's unthinkable to me that I wouldn't have them. So that, along with another post you wrote about advice you would give to women who want to have kids, that post I actually didn't get a chance to read. And I wonder if any of that involves a culture where you have a lot of men who the last thing in the world they want is kids. They want to go and have some fun with women for a good chunk of their lives. And then when they are in their 40s, then since they're, you know, as capable then as they are at any other age of finding a woman, they'll find a young woman who might want to have kids if they're interested then. Does it have anything to do with that?
Yeah, I don't recall exactly the list in that video. Check it out. It will be valid either way. But off the top of my head, women, if you want to have kids, you want a family, I suggest not waiting past 30. I suggest having that mindset as early as you can in your life and having it as a goal in the back of your head. That way, you are less likely to accidentally or purposefully breed with someone who would not be a good father and provider for your family. I would also recommend that you prepare yourself for a lifestyle adjustment. Depends what kind of person you are. Some women are just complete 100% nurture. They want to be with their kids all the time, etc. Other women are more outliers like myself, who actually, I have a lot of masculine traits and interests, and I'm a huge type A, and I feel guilty if I'm not working constantly, at least on something. So for me, it was a very big adjustment, but it did help that I had in the back of my mind since the age of 7 that I wanted this. I wanted kids. I know it's going to be a sacrifice of maybe my short-term preference goals, but unless, basically don't give yourself a shock. And when you're dating men, make sure that they know that that is your goal, because sometimes men will just kind of like not listen and go along with you because they like you, but your life goals aren't aligned. So once you're hitting your mid-20s, do not waste your time on dating men who aren't aligned with you with their life goals. Because what men will do consciously and unconsciously is date young women for like 3 to 5 years and then dump them and date a young woman again for 3 to 5 years, dump them and do it all over again. And then the women they dump are like almost 30 and have less time to get to know someone to, you know, marry them and have kids with them. So the harshest advice I would give to women is if you're over 25 and you're dating a guy for 3 years and he still hasn't proposed to you, I would have a serious conversation with him if you haven't. Like, the conversation shouldn't even have to come up, because dating him to begin with should have the assumption that if everything works out over these 3 years, we are going to get married and have kids. Like, he should be aware of that. But if he is aware of this and you've definitely made it clear and he still isn't proposing to you, I would consider leaving the relationship in a very serious way and getting together with someone who actually, in an actionable, serious way, wants to start a real future with you. Don't waste your time.
Tell me about Brave the World.
Me or the slogan?
Well, your whole package, really, the YouTube channel, the website.
Sure. So I started out with a Twitter at Brave the World, and I would tweet about topics not too different from this. It was more political oriented. And then I got the guts to start a YouTube channel. And one of my first videos was a pro-gun video. And that one pretty big. I got like 50,000 views right away. And then I did a couple anti-feminist videos. They were probably one of the first anti-feminist videos on YouTube. There was another girl who never ended up making anything else, but she had a really good story from her cadets experience about how women are actually being given preference in this world. And she used some really good examples. So she was actually probably the first one. And it kind of evolved to a bunch of political theory and anarchism and philosophy from that. Then I discovered Bitcoin. I was always into Austrian economics. So anarchism, Austrian economics, and then like Bitcoin, an actionable way to achieve some of these political philosophies and economic structures was, you know, available. So I got really into Bitcoin. And yeah, I'm still into all of this stuff. My focus has mostly been now on traditionalism, relationships, you know, kids. I do a ridiculous cooking channel. It's about eating well and like not feeding your kids sugar and carbs all day. It's pretty funny. Check it out. Very lighthearted content. Yeah, I don't know. I just kind of do what I like. So that's the nice thing about working for yourself completely. I just do what I like. I just put out whatever I want and people seem to enjoy it. And I've had I gained 10,000 subscribers 2 weeks ago just because from like my cooking videos. So that's funny.
So is that all on the same channel, even the cooking stuff?
Yeah, I just kept it to one channel because first of all, YouTube,
that's smart.
Yeah, YouTube doesn't let you monetize anything unless you're like over 10,000 subscribers.
Yeah.
So like I already have almost 50. So like why?
So why start from zero? Yeah.
Yeah. And the channel was always about like I was the face of the channel. So I sacrificed a lot of privacy to do this. So I'm going to utilize that and continue to utilize it and put out whatever I want. And if you like me, you like me. And if you disagree with some of my stuff, it's fine because you're kind of like you like the way I present it, or you're into kind of my lifestyle in general. So I kind of wanted to keep it about me and how I've evolved as a person, which, you know, if you watch my older videos and you see my newer videos, I definitely have come a long way in a lot of, not in my core beliefs, but my core beliefs have definitely been more fleshed out. And one of the biggest differences is I actually turned Christian recently after being an atheist for 20 years. Like I basically did a minor in a theology, in specifically philosophy of religion, actually, just so I can own the Christians. And I had this, there's a couple of videos on this about how juvenile that is. And I find it hilarious now that there are still these the type of atheist that exists today are the same type of atheists that existed 20 years ago when I was like a teenager, and it's still the same talking points. And that's probably a bad sign because they haven't really won the argument.
Well, that's a very interesting development I wasn't aware of. Have you commented on that publicly before?
Yeah. I have two videos about it. I have a video specifically about my switch. I have a video about morality without, like, if we can have morality without an objective moral giver, which is a God. I'll probably be doing more content on that. It's always fascinated me whether I was an atheist or a Christian. And right now, like, my struggle has been between, I did a lot of Twitter feeds on this and Twitter threads, Protestantism and my kind of discontentment with Protestantism and my return to my roots of Russian Orthodoxy. So yeah, I'll do a video on that eventually.
Wow.
That's been an interesting ride for me.
Very interesting. So I just went over to Twitter to make sure I'm following you. I am indeed following you. You're not following me, by the way. We gotta rectify that. Okay. That's good.
No
All
worries.
Right. So the website is bravetheworld.com. And
yes.
I will have links to the YouTube channel and your Twitter account and the website. I'll have all that up at tomwoods.com/1424. And I'll link to specifically some of the videos that we mentioned in this conversation so people can get to them quickly. So thanks for your time. And I'll be interested to follow along with your continuing story.
Thank you. This was great.
All right, folks, we have got some great episodes coming up this week for this Ladies of Liberty Week. Don't forget, June 26th, we are actually running out of seats at this point. We're almost sold out for the screening in New York City of The Housing Bubble, our new documentary. June 26th, 2019, we are premiering it in New York City, and joining us immediately following the screening will be an all-star financial panel chaired by Liz Klayman of Fox Business Network. And we will be joined by Peter Schiff, Gene Epstein, David Tice, and Jim Grant. It's going to be absolutely outstanding. You are definitely going to want to join us for that. So please do so. Go grab your ticket at tomwoods.com/NYC, and I'll see you there.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of The Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.